Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, March the 20th, 2009.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, Ben Bernanke is all in, and it looks like commodities are a safe haven for inflationary fears. Did the move upward in corn and beans reflect anything other than fear? We'll ask that and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Steve Erdman of EFG Group. Our panelists in studio today are Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois, and Graham Utter of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois. Here's the way the numbers settled in Chicago on the weekly trade. Remember, we give you the high and the low from the overnight and the day trade. May futures in the wheat pit, a 561 top for the week, a low at 511 and a half, and a settlement price at 550 and a quarter, up 43 and three quarters of a cent. July contract, 562 and a half, up 31 and three quarters. Lead option May corn, a 402 and a half top, the low at 381 and a half. Settlement price for the lead at 396 and a half, 21 and a half higher from the previous week. December corn at 428, up 10. You might recall that we're switching from the March to the May contract, so it includes both trades on the high and the low. May soybeans, 953 the high, the low at 864 and three quarters. Lead option at 952 in the bean pit, up 69 and a half cents for the May. November beans at 893, up 69 and a quarter. April live cattle, 85.80 the high, the low at 83.45, a settlement price at 85.20, 55 cents higher. The March feeders at 93.67 and a half, up a buck 72 and a half. And the April lean hogs this week, a 63.50 top, a bottom at 61.70, with a settlement price at 61.75. $1.45 lower on the week. You're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Our panelists again in studio are Matt Bennett and Graham Utter. Let's begin our discussion today with this question. Our Commodity Week podcast feed includes a 16-minute interview recorded Friday morning this week with University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good. In it, he suggests those using CRC at the 85% level, apparently a pretty popular federal crop insurance choice, need not worry about making any real new crop corn sales until December futures make a run to maybe $4.50. What's your current new corn marketing strategy? We'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
Well, I think what he has to say has some merit, but I like to attack the market from several different standpoints. I guess what I was trying to do this week a little bit was setting price floors through a hedge window. We'd like to maybe sell some higher price calls and then buy some puts at the $4 area, a little bit lower. You can do that fairly reasonably. I think using crop insurance as part of your marketing plan is certainly something that we all need to be looking very closely at. I think, you know, a guy's going to be able to go out there and probably market grain, you know, 30, 40, 50 cents higher than what he was maybe 6, 8 weeks ago. It's changed a mindset just a little bit. I do think we should at least begin making some sales in here. Use your crop insurance to give you the, you know, the comfort level to be able to make some sales, and then go ahead and set floors underneath what you don't have protected.
Graham Utter of AgriVisor.
Just basically an echo there of what Matt had to say. I mean, you know, we're feeling like right now is, you know, definitely a time where we want to carry insurance. Trend this week seems to be headed higher, but yet I don't think the comfort level's there with the farmers yet. I think we need to get in there, put some floored protection on, and have price covered if we do see a turnaround from this point.
And tell me more about the strategy that you're using. Why did you pick it? What does it offer producers?
Well, you know, if you come out here on the December option, sell like maybe a 560 to 580 call, and then go turn around and buy a $384 put, you know, what you're basically doing is saying the most I can get for my corn would be the 580 or whatever strike price it is that you're selling. You know, and then you have a floor underneath it minus the cost of your trade and, of course, the basis whenever you execute, you know, the sale or however you're going to exit that strategy and then sell grain. I like the strategy because most guys right now, if you tell them the worst thing that can happen to the upside is all you get is 580 for your corn, they say, well, you know, that's fantastic. And several of these guys we talked to about hedge windows last year were worried about 950. You know, was the most they were going to get for their corn. And now it looks like a no-brainer. I think people's eyes were opened a little bit by the wild swings we had last year. And I think putting a hedge window in place gives you the comfort level that, hey, this is the worst-case scenario for me. And you know what? I'm going to be able to go out there and maybe sleep a little better at night knowing the minimum price that I'm going to get would be maybe $4 or $4 minus, you know, a 20-cent trade, so $3.80.
You know, well, the $4, but on 75% of the crop, relatively speaking, you're already pretty much locked in at 404. I don't understand why you need to go ahead and double that up.
Well, I'm not saying I would double it up, but I would like to see a person attack the market from several different angles. Depending on what your insurance level, not everyone's going 85%.
Right.
If you're not going 85%, I would certainly want to see you protect a little bit more of it. You know, I feel like we're probably the last week or two, it's my opinion that maybe we're looking at a lower acreage number already. And so if we do get a lower acreage number, I'm thinking that, you know, corn market might have a really tough time to rally after we do get the acreage number unless we have weather problems.
Well, part of what Darrell's thought process was, Graham, included waiting for the end of March for that acreage report to see if the Informa numbers were even close to correct. Informa's corn acreage pick at 81.4 million. Of course, was well below the 86 million sown last season. What's yours?
Well, you know, I still similar. I might go back just a moment on the strategy that we're talking about here.
Okay.
and say that, you know, what Matt and I think, and we're both kind of on the same page on the strategy, is it's going to give us downside protection if we do it, you know, on whatever amount we do it on. But, you know, I think we're thinking, you know, at a lower percentile level, maybe 10%. Just to get something started here. You know, the nice thing is you have that strategy on. You really don't care which way the market goes, because if the market goes higher, you're participating in that upside potential. If the market goes lower, you know, we're covered at, you know, the current levels or wherever we purchase that put. So leaves a lot of flexibility here. And then yet we still have a lot of grain to market and a lot of time to watch what happens.
Right.
As we move into the planning report and start to see some of the expectations come from analysts of that report here in a week and a half or so, you know, I think the numbers probably, you know, they're obviously swaying a little bit towards soybeans right now. I think in reality we see that number come back towards corn when we actually see the numbers there on the 31st.
So, Matt, just to double-check, how much percentage are you thinking that you would be using on your corn strategy?
Well,
are you in that 10% level?
Yeah, I wouldn't go much more than that, especially if you're heavy on your insurance.
Yeah, so there's a if you're heavy on your insurance, at even if your CRC 85%, by the time you take your APH yields and you end up, I think, maybe about 25% of the crop is not covered,
right,
or not priced out in some range. So you're working with that 25%, relatively speaking.
Right. Oh.
And I might come in and say one more thing. With that 85% level, I guess my mentality is maybe a little different than what we're talking here, because I'm thinking if I'm covered on 85% of my crop, that gives me the ability to hedge 85% of my crop, because I know I'm protected with a yield guarantee and a price guarantee, to those two together, a revenue guarantee. So You know, if I lock in a price here and prices go lower, I essentially I'm selling my grain at a high price as well as being covered on the insurance side. So, you know, those two combined, we come out the best of both worlds.
So you're saying that you're willing to attack the market more readily than you would if you didn't have the crop insurance in place.
Right, correct.
And that producers should do that.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly.
All right. Well, I would suggest that producers listen to the Daryl Good feed that's in the Commodity Week podcast as well. It's also in the newsletter for the week, and you can hear what Daryl has to say about that in the marketplace, too. Let's talk about the soybean number from Informa. And we did this a bit last week, but I think it's worth reminding producers. 81.502 million. That's sharply higher than the 75.7 that U.S. farmers planted last year. We have $9 beans, relatively speaking, close on both old and new crop. Is this a place you want to sell beans or not?
I think that I'd like to attack the bean market similarly to as what I am the corn market, in that I feel, you know, you can put a hedge window in place on beans and have a pretty darn good floor underneath it. I feel like bean market could, if we get that kind of acreage number, could fall apart. There's no doubt about it. Now, is it going to? I have no idea if we're going to end up with over 80 on the acres of beans, but I do feel like, you know, going to more bean acres is a distinct possibility this year with, you know, input costs are still fairly high. And whenever you look at the fact that the insurance guarantee doesn't give a lot of farmers on more marginal ground the ability to maybe even cover their input costs, I think that that's going to swing a lot of acreage in the fringe areas and in the marginal areas back towards beans.
Graham, your feeling on the beans?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I know the Informa numbers are high. I mean, I think we come out at something under the 80 level with the acreage there. And so, you know, I know that's, you know, it's lower than what Informa is predicting. It's possibly lower than what the market expects, but yet I still feel like there's good levels here to protect or at least put some downside protection on. Similar to the corn strategy right now, we're working on some strategies that leave us some upside potential up to the $11 level or beyond, depending on where the farmer is comfortable. So, you know, again, it would be a conservative strategy in that, you know, maybe we only do, you know, 20% of our crop, 10% of our crop, but I get the feeling from the producers out there that they're a little more worried about the price of where they're going to get to sell their beans versus where they're going to sell their corn. So they're a little more willing to protect those prices at current levels.
Why are they more worried?
Well, they're worried that these numbers are correct that Informa comes out with, and they're a little bit worried that you know, that we do have a large amount of soybeans and we see price fall apart.
I have another tactical question for the two of you. As you talk to producers, are there producers out there that have farms where they know their cash rent and their nitrogen costs are too high, and they're actually looking at the numbers now and saying, this is just a loss? They're, unless the market rallies in some substantial way, I'm going to take a loss on the market this year on that farm.
I think there's more of it out there than maybe what most people would feel comfortable talking about. It reminds me a little bit of last summer going into the fall with guys that were getting ready to plant wheat. They felt like going into the ground, they were almost locked into a loss unless we had a substantial rally, yet they went ahead and planted it because it's something they normally do. Now, you know, I think that there were guys that bought fertilizer last fall because they usually buy it and work it in the ground. There's guys that got caught on the anhydrous a little bit. You know, and with cash rents, we've all heard several stories about cash rents. I think that, you know, certainly things have changed significantly in the last several months, last year. Any high cash rent person has to be a little bit uneasy, considering whenever they lock those cash rents in, you know, corn was twice the value that, or almost twice the value of what it is now. So, you know, I do think there's a lot of nervous people out there, and there's probably some renegotiating going on. And, you know, I think that it's definitely, it's one of these times where there's going to be a little bit of change in the ag industry in the Midwest just because of what has happened. And, you know, there might be some tough times for people.
Consolidation on the way?
Possibly. You know, what I'm finding out working with producers and looking at different levels of crop insurance, I mean, the place I start is where their break-even is. And when I pull up and see break-evens right now in corn, we're either at or below those break-evens in price. And that depends on location and, of course, what the individual's break-evens are. But in soybeans, you know, right now we can show a slight profit, but the potential, if the crop is good, if the market stays strong, the potential is there on the corn side. So that's what's keeping, I think, producers leaning towards corn as what they'll put in the ground.
You're listening to the March 20th edition of Commodity Week. It is a production of the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We'll be back in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with Steve Erdman of the EFG Group.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333 and by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. This was a nice mild week across Illinois before temperatures dropped back to near normal levels following the passage of a cold front on Wednesday night. Temperatures remained above normal for much of the week, with 70s widespread across Illinois on Tuesday. Increasing cloudiness with the approaching cold front on Wednesday kept temperatures somewhat cooler then, but still in the 50s and 60s. On the whole, though, temperatures were pretty close to normal for the week as a whole. The cold front did trigger some rain across Illinois, but most of it was rather light due to the dry air over the Midwest. Rainfall was generally a tenth of an inch or less. The exception to this was the area between Interstates 70 and 64 in southern Illinois, where the rain ranged from 1/4 to 3/4 of an inch. There will definitely be a spring-like feel to the air next week as warm, windy weather sets up across the Midwest. A low-pressure system will be gathering strength over the Rockies this weekend, and as it lifts out to the northeast early next week, it will bring a good chance for showers and thunderstorms to Illinois for the first half of the week. Depending on how things set up, much of Illinois could receive significant rainfall next week with this system. Once the front associated with the low pushes through Illinois, it looks like the last half of the week will be fair, with temperatures running at or even a little above normal. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Listening to Commodity Week. It's the March 20th edition. It's a production of the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Our panelists in studio today, Graham Otter of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois. On the line with us this afternoon is our guest, is Steve Erdman. He's with the EFG Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Steve, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Steve, the Wall Street Journal this week wrote about Ben Bernanke's all-in policy. Here's how the article began. If Ben Bernanke weren't an economist and a central banker, we'd guess he'd be a poker player on one of those cable channels with dark shades and a penchant for betting all his chips in Texas Hold'em. The Federal Reserve Chairman certainly does like to go all in on monetary policy, never mind the risks. Now, I know you've been watching the Fed policy fairly closely. Did this week's infusion into the marketplace create a safer market for the world's money?
I don't know about that. I think that they're pulling out all the stops, as you suggested, and trying to stimulate the economy, not just the U.S. economy, but the world economy. I mean, they pushed the nuclear button this week, and we saw the reaction from it. We saw the dollar move down over 4%, gold move up 7%, treasuries, the futures rallied 7%, which would suggest lower rates, and crude continued its counter trend rally. But I don't know of anyone that was expecting that move by the Fed this week.
Does it make commodity markets a safer hedge?
Well, I think that's the attitude. That's the Chicago mindset. And, you know, you heard the talking heads on CNBC and some of the other shows talking about inflation and talking about how people should be viewing commodities now. But what they keep forgetting is we're still in the throes of a world economic deflationary cycle. I mean, that we don't have inflationary forces yet. I think inventories are probably down because the tough times that people have been going through, and if we do see an uptick in demand, it is going to put price pressure on things, and we will see inflationary factors start to come into play. But we're a little ahead of the curve right now. I still think there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty, and I have to agree with Matt and Graham and how they are advising a cautionary marketing strategy. I am very, very cautious about the grain markets right now. I think the risk to people when we have these kind of acreage numbers that we're touting right now that the market's trading, the risk is to the downside in price.
Steve, when you take a look at what the dollar's doing right now as we start to try to anticipate any inflationary time period come in, what are your thoughts on, you know, I guess time-wise, do you see this dollar slowly heading a little bit lower and inflation coming in? And, you know, I guess I'm looking out 6 months. What are your thoughts out that far?
Well, if you look at deflationary times in the past, you see the dollar strengthen. And every time we've tried to really nail the dollar and dramatically weaken the dollar, it's come back pretty consistently, and I think that's what we have to be mindful of. It again needs to be monitored. When does this deflationary influence or deflationary cycle end? And I can't project that. I don't know that anybody really knows how dramatic the economic shape that the world economies are in right now. That's why you see the Fed push the nuclear button. You see the kind of monetary policy that Great Britain has enacted. I think these monetary policies are doing their utmost to stimulate the world economy. And I still think the dollar, if you look at a long-term chart and you see how much the dollar has fallen from the 120 area down to, I think we had a low just below 72, and then we rallied back to 89, and now we've broken 500 points back to 84.32 or so in the dollar index. The dollar index today was up 68. There's still, as long as we have a deflationary cycle, as long as the U.S. is perceived to be the strongest economy in the world, and, you know, I'm saying that with tongue-in-cheek, it's going to still be a relative thing, that the dollar is still going to maintain relative strength even though we go through these knee-jerk reactions like we had when the Fed came out and with the $1.1 or $1.2 trillion of stimulus.
Steve, whenever you talked acreage there just a second ago when you opened, you know, I guess I've been looking, and I think corn acreage is probably a little bit lower for a variety of reasons than the 86, you know, in March.
I guess
my thinking all along has been we're going to come in with a low number in March, and then we could very well, if we could, you know, if we do get much of a rally, we're probably going to have the potential for a nice shift depending on what our spring weather is like. But then, you know, this rally the last couple weeks
Has
made me feel as though maybe we're pricing that in already. What's your thinking on acreage specifically, and how would you approach that if you were talking to a producer?
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I think the soybean corn ratio got to 2-1, and we've been trading 2.2-1, and you saw the effect of what the markets had to do once Informa came out. Informa came out with, 81.419 in corn and 81.502 in beans. That's down 4.5 million acres in corn and 5.78 in beans from the USDA's numbers. I still perceive the market as having risk because I think whether people believe Informa or not or agree with Informa or not, we're trading those numbers. They're in the market. I think we believe that the numbers are closer to probably 84 in corn planted acres. As you guys alluded to earlier in the conversation, that I think a lot of guys put nitrogen on in the fall at higher prices, but what we've done in the ratio of corn to beans in the last, I don't even think it's been 10 days, is going to have a dramatic impact on planting intentions as it did a year ago. We have a battle going on for acreage between corn and soybeans, and it still remains. And we haven't even really begun to talk that much about some of the fringe areas, and I heard you guys mention that earlier, and the impact that the moisture up in North Dakota, for example, there's still a tremendous amount of acreage up there of old crop corn that hasn't been brought out of the field because of how wet it's been. And they keep getting snow, and now they're projected to get 1 or 2 inches of rain. So it's a mess. It should suggest smaller spring wheat acreage and probably higher soybean acres or edible beans and that sort of thing. But there's a lot of uncertainty still in the marketplace.
So where do you think that the market is trading acreage at 84?
I think the market has looked at the Informa numbers of 81.4.
Right.
That is a tremendously low number for corn. Nobody expected that.
And you think they're really trading that?
They have to be. It's whether they believe it or not, it's in the market. It's out there.
So
how much more bullish can the USDA be than 81.419? Do any of the four of us believe that the USDA on March 31st will be lower than 81.419? That's the key,
right?
In my opinion.
And if they're very much higher, for instance, at 84?
Look, guys, I mean, Todd, you were there at the meeting we had in Covington a week ago, 10 days ago, when we asked how many producers still owned old crop corn about what? You put the estimation on. How many people
40%.
Old? Say it again?
40%?
I thought it was bigger than that, but that's fine. It's a lot of people still own old crop corn. And the fact of the matter is, guys, when you look at world stocks, we've got wheat at 155.85 million metric tons, up from the February number 149.96. We've got corn stocks in the world at 144.6, up from 136.7. We, like usual, are too focused on the U.S. crop, the U.S. planting intentions. The fact of the matter is, world coarse grain stocks are what part of the reason that we got so bullish with commodity prices in the last 2 or 3 years, because we had a perfect storm of a very tight world supply-demand and fund money coming in to juice the market higher.
Any final word from you before I let you go?
I think corn producers need to hedge, get some protection. I liked what I heard from Matt. I think a fence strategy is a tremendous strategy for producers.
Thanks much, Steve.
Thank you.
Steve Erdman is with the EFG Group. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. A final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Graham Utter.
Well, I think going forward here, producers are concerned with what to do with new crop, but they also have quite a bit of old crop left. I think we need to look at covering both of those, starting off with old crop. You know, I'd look at getting, as basis has started to weaken already, I'd look at getting some of that basis locked in out through May, getting some price protection on out there and getting comfortable in the old crop stuff. Looking towards new crop, I'd look at making some sort of fence strategy, something to protect the downside but leave upside potential open.
And Matt Bennett?
I agree with what Graham said. I think as we look in here before the acreage comes out the 31st, maybe we want to get something put in place. If you want to put some sort of a strategy on for your 09, it might be a good time to do it, because after the report comes out, all the anticipation is going to be gone.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois. Graham Utter of AgriVisor out of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois. Thanks for listening to the program. This is Commodity Week, the 20th of March edition. We'll talk with you again next week. I'm Todd Gleason.